and welcome to the Picture House podcast, a very special edition of the show all about Free Solo, a fantastic new documentary in cinemas right now. And I am very pleased to be joined by the directors of the film,
Jimmy Chen
and Chai Vassarelli.
Thank you so much for joining me in Soho. It's very wintry outside and we're in quite a lovely grotto at the moment, so it's nice to be indoors.
Yes.
I was just saying earlier before we started recording, we took the live satellite event for the film in our theatres on Tuesday. It was so busy. The audiences were so stoked. It must be quite nice that you're having this reception to the film. How does it feel sort of being in the middle of this?
Well, you never know when you're making a film how it's going to land with audiences. You hope. And I think that the most moving part of this experience for all of us, Alex included, has been this kind of outpouring of response from audiences about how his courage inspires them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his ability to make the impossible possible is something they have their own Free Solo in their lives.
And am I right in thinking the UK is the first territory outside the States to play the film?
Yes, the UK is the first international territory where the film is going into theatres.
I guess you've had quite a lot of experience with US audiences. Are the British audiences acting in a similar way, in a different way? Has anything come up on this trip?
I'm so happy you asked. British audiences are reacting very much like American audiences, which was, again, quite moving for us. But the British don't understand what the word tweaker means. So for the record, it was one of our best jokes in America. So for everyone who's listening, tweaker means kind of a misfit. Alex was a misfit.
I have to admit, I didn't know.
It's a big laugh line in the film. And then in the audiences here, when we're here for our previews, silence. And Alex and I looked at each other being like, they don't understand the word. So it's a very American word, I guess. Tweaker means misfit.
Maybe on the DVD, a singular subtitle should go.
Yeah, we'll dub that in for the UK release.
The film takes place over quite a large period of time. Is it a couple of years?
Yes, it's over 2 years of production.
And when did the project actually start for you guys? How long has Free Solo been with you?
I think we first started talking about it in 2015 after our previous film, Meru.
Mm-hmm.
And we were thinking about our next project. And I've known Alex for 10 years. Years and traveled around the world and climbed with Alex. And I've also kind of worked and filmed in the kind of adventure, vertical mountain realm for 20 years. So I've worked with a lot of really incredible athletes, many of them at the peak of their careers. And I immediately recognized that Alex was different, even among kind of a peer group of anomalies, that he was singular in his ability to manage fear and to execute perfectly when the stakes were the highest. And so in that level, I knew that he was special. But there's also the story about why he started free soloing. And it was less scary for Alex to climb alone without ropes than it was to connect with people and ask them to climb with him. And that story always moved us, because here's this person that was a misfit or a tweaker that, you know, was fearful of all of these different things. And he's meticulous in how he addresses them. He faces fear head on and meticulously moves through them. And we just thought that that was an incredible characteristic, even if you weren't talking about Al Cap, you know, but just in the way he approaches life.
So you're thinking a film about Alex, regardless of El Cap, would be a great movie project, and we should do that.
Well, that's what we were thinking about when we first approached Alex about a film. Alex's response was that the only appropriate movie to make if you were making a movie about Alex would be him free soloing El Cap, which changed the dimensions of the project and terrified us on many levels. But ultimately, he was probably right.
What a gift to have a collaborator like Alex, who's actually, if you want to make a movie about me, guys, it has to be about this particular thing. Like that feels like quite a gift as a collaborative like filmmaking unit.
Well, it's kind of emblematic, I think, of the whole partnership and the trust between myself, Jimmy, and Alex, where this film would be impossible unless we trusted everyone's decision-making capacity. And also how it became this kind of connected and communal journey. You know, as Alex practiced for a year and a half, he had his best friends who were the high angle cinematography team, all of whom were made up of elite pro climbers who could also film, right next to him. As they were refining their shots, they were also giving him feedback on the climbing. And it became this I don't know, we were a very special community or like group of people. And the whole, like, we carried the weight of it in some way around him. And so I think at the, like, at the end, it just, I think it's kind of the magic of the film is that you have people who are very close to Alex who are responding to him as you watch the film.
I think that's quite a unique viewing experience for the audience. It makes it feel like quite an intimate experience because everybody knows each other and they trust each other and there's so much love on screen. And I really like that decision that, you know, the camera operators, they're characters in the film. Jimmy, you're a character in the film. You know, it's you know what's at stake because everybody is telling you and you can see it on their faces.
No, but it's interesting because like it's the climbing moments as well as the off mountain moments that are intimate. They're both intimate. All of it is. And it's because everyone knew him so well.
And that was the film we wanted to make. You know, we really wanted something that had emotional depth and that brought people in so that they could experience something visceral, both in terms of the climbing, but also in terms of this character's vulnerabilities and his relationships.
You sort of see it in the film. There's an attempt which isn't the final attempt. And I guess you guys don't know how long this project is going to go on for. Was that sort of tricky to sort of manage the crew in it as well? You know, like, we actually don't know when this will finish, but it will finish when he climbs El Cap.
It was a hard thing to ask of our crew. You know, Jimmy and I can decide to commit to a project, and we have our reasons for committing. And committed was kind of the word about this film. So Alex was committed, we were committed. But I have to say that our crew was extraordinary in their commitment because it really meant, the open-endedness of this meant forsaking other work, making themselves available, you know, forsaking some personal life. And, you know, it still moves us. It was just a very special thing where everyone believed in Alex and committed to the endeavor.
Yeah, and I think that the film really reflects that level of commitment that everybody put into it and the heart that everybody put into it. I mean, the whole crew really, I mean, gave up a lot and sacrificed personal time and just not knowing where it was going, but showing up every day for these huge days. You know, I mean, we often had 16 to 18 hour days. We go up the mountain, rig, shoot, take down all the ropes, come back down. I mean, these were really big, physically exhausting, mentally exhausting days. And, you know, they just stuck with it.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. And it was due in part to their friendship with Alex. And I think, you know, Alex also understood that, you know, everybody was kind of carrying this burden as well and how much they were putting into it.
Did Alex ever talk to you about his sort of relationship with the cameras? Like what, when he's climbing, it's, you know, where is a good sort of camera angle for him and what he does and doesn't want to see when he's climbing?
Yeah, I mean, because I've worked with Alex for, you know, 10 years, it makes things a lot easier. A lot of things are understood. We've filmed together in some other very high-stakes situations before. And, you know, that was really helpful in knowing how Alex reacts in those kind of situations and how he makes decisions and what kind of pressure he can handle. And I think in the reverse, he knows how I manage those situations, how the teams that I bring to the table. And so, you know, there might have been small things, you know, where we would have to check in. But in a broad scope, we'd only have to talk about maybe 10% of those situations where we weren't totally clear. And it was just to refine things.
I really like, before some of the attempts, there's like, you see the briefing for the camera operators. And I sort of like that, you know, you're planning your own climb separate to Alex to make sure you're all sort of there. To be ahead of what Alex is doing in the film, how early were your days to sort of get in position and to be ready for when he goes past on the mountain?
Oh, yeah. I mean, these days were really huge days because he'd start climbing at 5, you know, in the morning, and we'd have to be in position a few hours after that, but we'd have to go in from the top. So, you know, you're carrying 50-pound packs to the top of El Cap, which is, you know, an hour and a half. Well, it's more like 3 hours. Given our team, it'd be 2 hours moving pretty quickly, very quickly. And then managing all the ropes, thousands of feet of rope, having all your camera equipment ready and set up and then basically rappelling into the wall. And it's logistically, you know, very complex. But everybody on the team, you know, they were all elite professional climbers. Some of them have their own speed records on El Cap. You know, they are among Alex's peer group. You know, they're at the very top. So, you know, moving quickly just to get into position sometimes from the start of the hike would be 5 hours just to get into position. And then you build your cameras and wait until he gets there. And then you're filming for an hour or so. And then, you know, so these were really long days.
What do you do when you're on the side of a mountain and something's not working camera-wise? Is that something that happens?
It doesn't. Not with this team. We were very meticulous in, you know, that also meant that when you got back at the end of the day that you'd have to deconstruct all your cameras, clean them, make sure everything was operating, charge batteries, and just have all of your equipment. You also had to have food and water for the day and headlamps and all the other things that you have to carry and equipment you have to carry when you're climbing on a big wall. So there was just a lot to manage. And, you know, it was only made possible that kind of, you know, preparation was second nature for this team in terms of the climbing aspects, so that they had the bandwidth to think about all the camera equipment and not forget things.
As well as Alex doing this great physical challenge, he's going through quite a lot in his personal life. And I think it's so, I mean, again, it feels like what a great time to be filming him. How did you discuss that part of the film with Alex?
Well, when we began making this film, Alex was online dating.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it was quite amusing in that here we were filming something that was quite tense and stressful. And I was like, great, there's going to be this amazing comic relief when Alex invites a woman to go back to his van or tries to explain to them what he does for a living. Mm. And then he met Sonny, who is a remarkable human who is self-confident enough and loving enough in a way to be able to push back on him and say, this makes me uncomfortable, but I'll still try to love you for who you are. And I think this is the beauty of nonfiction filmmaking, where you don't know what's going to happen next. And we got lucky in that suddenly Alex was falling in love and we're witnessing him emotionally evolve as he has two mountains to climb, be it El Cap, as well as negotiating a meaningful relationship. He is a very candid person, but he also is incredibly uncomfortable with intimacy, as you see in the film. But his commitment to the film was such that he trusted us in what we thought was important to film. So, you know, granted, we lived in the van already before Sonny moved in.
Right.
So we're like, welcome to our van. But he was very gracious about the whole thing. And likewise with his family, where he said, you know, we don't really talk about much, but you're welcome to talk to them about anything you'd like. And his family was very gracious. But I think it was a challenging and growing experience for Alex.
What was the reaction from Sonny when she turns up and she's just starting to date this guy and he has a film crew following him?
I mean, I think the fact is it was incredibly uncomfortable. And she, too, was brave and gracious. And at the same time, they have this incredible chemistry between the two of them and were compelled to continue despite the circumstances. Like, it was more important to try to be together while remaining committed to this project that he was doing. Because, you know, El Cap was his 8-year dream, like, and we were part of that. And so, I mean, Sonny was incredibly gracious, and I think that her emotional intelligence is remarkable, and the film got lucky.
I just wanted to ask, during that, the sort of the final attempts, it's put together so well, but it is quite, you say it takes about 3.5 hours, 4 hours to actually do the climb. What was the challenge of sort of editing that sequence down to a tense, a 20-minute piece of cinema?
Well, we edit while we film, so...
Wow.
It was refined over and over again as the high angle team and Jimmy were formulating the shots that he wanted. So everyone had a priority, like that you knew it was essentially a shot list that we knew what we absolutely needed. But it helped us because the mountain is so big. There is no way with our resources we could cover the whole climb. It's 3,000 feet. But we understood narratively that the free blast slabs and the boulder problem were essential. And that there were a few other spots, like the Traverse or the Monster, that were visually stunning and could actually do justice to the grandeur of El Cap. So, you know, it was always our intention was always to make a film that could speak on many different levels. And so having this limitation of just how much climbing footage we could capture was a challenge that was meaningful. you know, because it was always going to be building to the climb so that you could, audiences could understand, could be with him while he climbed. And that took a lot of groundwork.
And Alex isn't the only person on El Cap when he's doing the climb. What's the person in the unicorn costume doing on there?
I'm going to take this just because the unicorn's my favorite part of the movie. I just, again, one of those remarkable moments in nonfiction where, you know, Alex is a unicorn. He's totally unique. He's trying this endeavor that is also a unicorn, totally singular. And then there is a unicorn on the mountain that's Lavender.
I loved that bit in the cinema. It got a good response.
It was an amazing moment. When it happened, it was exactly the like comic relief we needed. Everyone was so tense. And then we were like laughing. I mean, it was only a good omen. It was only good.
And I like how Alex kind of just carries on right past. He doesn't even, it's like, yep, fine.
Yeah. He didn't see it was a unicorn because the guy was still on the portal edge. We were all cracking up and he didn't know.
Has he commented on it since?
Oh, I mean, everyone commented. It's like Werner Herzog saw the film and someone in our team, you know, we all were so eager to hear what Werner thought. And someone on our team met him and they're like, so what do you think of the film? And he was like, the unicorn. It was the one comment he gave us. Okay. He's like, that is the beauty of nonfiction. You know, it was funny.
That's a poster quote, a tribute. That's a song on the side of the bus.
Yeah, we could just cut, like, unicorn.
The film looks incredible on the big screen, but it also sounds incredible. You've got an amazing score to this film by Marco Beltrami. At what point in a project like this do you start to think of, you know, how it will be presented in theatres, who's going to do the score and go through that process?
I think in nonfiction, it's never early enough because you're still trying to get your act together with your story. But Marco, I mean, it was very special. He is the king of suspense. I mean, this is what he does. It's what he's interested in. And he's also kind of our right type of crazy. Like, he actually races motorcycles. So he really is interested in the drive and the passion and also the method that Alex practices as well as Jimmy, as well as the rest of our crew, just kind of that excellence. So, I mean, so it was great, and he was wonderful to work with. He evolved with us. The film changed a lot as he was composing, and he was very nice about it.
Yeah, he was incredible. I mean, we kind of almost knew right when we met him, you know, that he got us and we got him. And, you know, when he showed up with his first pass on the film, I mean, you know, you're trying to keep your expectations in a certain place, and I think when we heard his first pass on it, we were very happy.
I guess you know the footage so well by that point, but seeing it with a score must add a whole extra sort of layer to the movie.
Yeah, well, it's often, you know, there's filmmakers I'm sure are familiar, but, you know, when you have to move from the temp score to the composed score, that can be kind of difficult sometimes or painful. And in this case, it wasn't. You know, we listened to the score and we thought, wow, this is better.
It's incredible. Yeah, I'm looking forward to I want to take all my friends to see the movie, but I really want to hear the score again. I really like Marco Beltrami's work, and it's such a surprise. I was like, I need to see who did the music. And it was like, wow, yeah, this is the guy who's done so many scores that I love. And I don't think I've ever seen him do a documentary score before.
Yeah. I think it's his first.
Oh, wow.
And he's just so talented. It was a privilege to work with him.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. We are really looking forward to playing this film in our cinemas. Even though it's not related to Christmas at all, it does feel like a really good film to watch over the holidays. I think it's quite a bonding experience for an audience.
Yeah. It's a good family movie, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, my friend was eating a lot of popcorn during the film, but he wasn't hungry. He was like, I'm just stressed. I'm just stress eating my way through this.
Well, I think the one like really special thing about Free Solo in the holidays, it's like it is one of those few films that you can bring your children as well as your parents.
Yes.
Every generation takes something from it. And, you know, we have two small children who've watched the film, and it's just interesting. I think everyone has a Free Solo in their life.
And it's inspiring as well.
It's inspiring. Yeah.
So perfect, perfect Christmas viewing. Thank you so much, Chai. Thank you, Jimmy. Enjoy the rest of your time in London.
Thank you for having us.
And a huge thank you to Silk Factory, proud supporters of the Picture House podcast. Silk Factory are an awesome film marketing creative agency. We're sat in them right now, and it's beautiful. They make the coolest trailers and creative content out there across TV, digital, and social platforms. We think they're great. We record the podcast here. They're super, super nice. We love their fantastic work, and you can check it out at www.thesilkfactory.co. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks.